Welcome to Normal Adjustments, because not all tales are created equal, and neither the people that tell them. Welcome everyone to another episode of Normal Adjustments. This is your host, Nicole, once again with another fabulous episode and another fabulous guest. So I'm just going to cut right into it. Hi, Rafa.
Hello, 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 Nicole.
So today with us, I have Rafa Rosa. He's a very dear friend of mine for a long time now. You know what? It's weird, Rafa, that if I say now a long time, that it's me accepting that it's been a long time since when I moved to New York. Therefore, that means we're old.
10 years in New York. It's crazy. Before I left now to be in Puerto Rico, 10 years. That's a long time. You know, you become another person, which is a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. So we have Rafa here today for multiple reasons, but main reason is because you are a diabetes patient.
Yes, I am type 1 diabetic.
Type 1 diabetic.
My pancreas does not create insulin on its own.
Okay. So let's start there. What does diabetes type 1 mean?
Yeah, it's like, you know, my pancreas doesn't create insulin on its own. And the pancreas is a very important organ, because the insulin turns what you eat, the carbohydrates, right, the proteins and the fats, into energy. And without that energy, you can't do anything, right? Because it goes straight into the bloodstream. That's what insulin does. And when you can't produce that naturally, you don't have any energy. You can't do anything. That's actually how you find out that you have diabetes, right? You start losing a lot of weight. You start, urinating a lot, because your body is just not, everything you're eating is not turning into energy. Your body's just getting rid of it. And, you know, I remember I was 22. I lost probably 30 pounds. And I've always been skinny, but I was visibly more skinny, right? And then I went to the hospital, and they did all the tests, and apparently I was honeymooning.
Okay, so before you get to that, so your diabetes started at 21.
I started at 22, yeah.
22. And you didn't have then a childhood diagnosis.
Well, I don't know if I did. I guess not. You know, nobody had ever mentioned anything like that to me. You know, my diabetes is also called juvenile diabetes, or some people do call it juvenile diabetes.
Did you experience symptoms when you were growing up?
No, not really. I was I've always been super hyper. I was an athlete. I played basketball every night, you know, in a team when I was in high school. And I played guitar on my own, because we had a neighbor that finally, he had a bunch of guitars. And then, you know, he lent me, he's like, you want to learn? And I'm like, yeah. And then he just gives me one. And then that's how music got into my life. But yeah, it was pretty normal, you know, and I went to music school. I was normal, you know, and then all of a sudden it was like a 2-week period, and I was like 21, 22. I was studying a lot. I was like almost done with music school. I was in my third or fourth year, you know, just a 2-week period where I was just not feeling good. It was just like my body just went like, yeah. Like all of a sudden my battery was being drained, you know.
That's interesting. Because I thought, and this is a misconception, which is a wonderful thing for you to correct it, that type 1 needed to be from childhood diagnosis.
Well, some people are born type 1. Some people like me get type 1 later. Some people, for example, there's so many reasons I've read about diabetes. I mean, everybody's so individual, right? That's, you know, the trick about diabetes, that you have to kind of almost experiment on yourself. You know, you have to see what works for you. You know, just because this diabetic, you know, they can eat oranges doesn't mean you can, you know, because the oranges, your body might be, you know,
totally fine.
Yeah, or your body might not, might all of a sudden you check your sugar and boop, you know, hey, stay away from the oranges. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a weird diabetic in that sense. Like, I can eat bananas.
Yeah.
Like, I can eat 2 or 3 bananas and my sugar's going to just kind of level out and be nice. And then if I do exercise, right, I'll burn them. So I'm like really weird that way. But then there are other diabetics that can't eat bananas because their sugar is going to skyrocket. So you really have to do a lot of like trial and error with what you're eating, you know, and then check your sugar and then get into a routine with the food. And in the moment that this stuff happened to me, you know, the reality is I was in the full Puerto Rican diet, which is carbohydrates, starch and rice, beans, tostones, amarillo. That stuff is all carbohydrates. I mean, and I guess my body just kind of went into like a little shock. And at the time, you know, I was crying. You know, my first insulin shot, I was like crying after I got diagnosed, right after, you know, we got a second opinion, you know, and all that, you know, and I was just sitting there like, fuck, this sucks, you know.
What happened in that day that you got diagnosed? Because those are quite interesting situations. So if anybody is feeling or see that, they can kind of say, oh, that might be.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I got a first opinion. And then, you know, the first opinion was like, oh, you know, you're going to have to use insulin for the rest of your life. And I told, you know, I told my mother, because at the time I was living with her, I was still in school. And it was just me and my mom. And, you know, and she was like, well, this is pretty horrible. Let's get a second opinion. You know, let's just not take their word for it. And then we went to another person and they said word for word exactly what the other doctor said.
Did you fainted?
No, I was urinating a lot. Like, I was just losing a lot of weight. I was just everything I was eating. I was thirsty because you're urinating so much. You're dehydrating. It's like when you go out drinking with your friends for fun. And then the next day you're like literally drinking water the whole day. It's kind of like that, but without drinking with your friends the night before. I went back to the first doctor because she was great. And, you know, I just started asking her questions. You know, she gave me this kind of like insulin to start off, like this kind of treatment to see how it would work. And then like I said, my mom with her tough love, you know, she made me food and then she put the insulin right next to me in the pan. And she's like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to let the food get there cold or you're going to shoot it up and go, you know, let's do this. And, you know, it was pretty tedious injecting myself with insulin the first time. It was fucking horrible. But, you know, you get used to it, I guess, over time. And then, I don't know, I felt like I could feel normal because I didn't feel horrible, right? So I just started reading a lot. I bought this book, How to Think Like a Pancreas.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
It's a great book at the time, and it has several revisions. But yeah, it kind of like taught me to think like my pancreas, that, you know, sometimes you eat something small or, you know, take a sip of juice, your pancreas gives you a little insulin, which is the way this treatment works, but I'll get to this in a second. You know, and yeah, so I you know, education about what I was eating, you know, I went to a nutritionist and I was like, wow, I was eating so bad.
Mm.
You know, like, especially, like I said, the Puerto Rican diet really does not involve a lot of healthy things. They do have a lot of healthy things though. Like, for example, like ñame and viandas and all those like ground roots that Puerto Ricans make. A lot of the people in the, you know, in the mountain areas, you know, those guys are like 90 and 100. And you try to ruffle them up and they're like tough as rocks because that's all they eat. They all they eat is ground vegetables and fruit.
It's funny because I was having this conversation with my brother yesterday about, in theory, like our diet is quite balanced diet. In theory, the problem is that everything is fried. And then that's when it's all fucked. Because then the carbohydrate levels just go straight up. But in theory, you have a carb with the rice, the legumes with the beans, and then a protein. It should be fine, but no.
I mean, we also have, I don't know how to describe this, but we're also very Americanized. So instead of, for example, the way I measure, this book at the time showed me how to measure my portions. And if I'm going to serve myself something, don't make it bigger than your fist. Right? Mm-hmm. Because if you serve yourself two fists, imagine three, four, you know what I mean? That's a lot of food. And that's the thing about American diet that is kind of like, you know, you go to a place like Texas, for example, and they serve one, for one person, a solid two people can eat and repeat. You know what I mean? So those are part of the things that have trickled down, so to say, into Puerto Rico. When they serve you here, you know, they give you seconds. And that's the problem. You know, it's not rice, what you said. It's not that you're eating rice and beans. It's all of a sudden is that they're giving you rice and beans again. Oh, and they're adding this fried thing again. You know what I mean? So that's when your sugar just goes
out. How was that education process? Because one of the things that fascinates me with diabetes is that what the challenging part of this is, something you have to do every day to survive.
Four times a day, at least. No, actually, I eat like four or five times. It's a constant educational process about food. Mm-hmm. That would be how I guess I've done it. Like every year I'm learning, trying to learn something. That's actually what I loved about eating in New York, because eating healthy in New York is a lot easier. You know, there's a salad, there's a kale spot here or whatever, Salad and Co. And you make yourself a salad with kale salad with quinoa, chicken, you know, you put beans in there. Because I'm so hyper, and that's the other thing I know about myself. I'm so hyper that I burn off stuff quick. So I got to give myself something to feel full, but then not to be like, I call it in, in a food coma or mm-hmm. food, because you're over-carbed up, but there are good carbs, you know, mm-hmm. and is a good carb, for example, because it's high in fiber, it's the glycemic index is a lot lower and stuff like that. So your body kind of processes it better, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? You feel better, you feel with a lot more energy. You know, I have a lot of nuts in my diet, you know, almonds, cashews, all that kind of stuff. I'm always eating something every couple hours, you know, just to keep myself. It's kind of like you want to keep the waves in the middle. You don't want the
yeah, spot. Yeah. You don't want the spikes. Not at all. It's a consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want it to be volatile, right? Like, you know, like a, whatever, a stock market or something.
A stock market. So you get diagnosed, you put your first insulin shot and you cry.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you have to do this every day, four times a day, or every time you eat.
At that point, yes, because that treatment was kind of like it wasn't the best treatment for me, because we didn't know, right? We have to kind of like see what works, right?
Walk us through that. What does that mean? What type of treatment is that?
The insulin that I had at the time was called a 50-50 mix. And that's just weird stuff that they give the, not weird stuff. It's insulin. It's two types of insulin at once. It's one for the immediate, right? And then it's one for the long term, right? And that's good insulin, for example, for somebody that has a really super set schedule of eating. Like if I'm 80 years old and I'm diabetic and I eat every day at 9, every day at 12, every day at 5, and then I go to bed, you know what I mean? Like, that insulin's pretty good for me. But a person like me, who's young, and, you know, sometimes we don't have time to eat here, sometimes we gotta grab a little snack here, and then eat the full meal a little bit later, that wasn't my best treatment. So I had to figure that out as I went along. And then the doctor, one day, she's like, why don't you get on the pump? And I'm like, the pump? And, you know, she showed me the whole thing, and I didn't buy it at first. It took me, I was stubborn about it, because my idea of being connected to something, you know, I was just like, no, but, you know, what if I have, you know, what if when I'm with a girl or something, you know, I told her, can I take it off? You know, I had all these questions at the time, you know, And you know, shower, same thing, right? The ocean, whatever. And you know, she's like, oh well, you know, I'll do some reading. And the more reading I did, you know, I was like, maybe I'll be able to actually feel a little bit more normal instead of with this 50-50. Because the thing is, with the 50-50, if you didn't eat when you're supposed to, your sugar just just dropped, you know. And sometimes I would miss meals because I'd be driving or I'd be, you know, in the middle of a rehearsal. And, you know, that's not convenient for my way of life, right? So I you know, I gave in and I got on the Medtronic 530G.
It sounds like you're buying a car.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like a little beeper. This is the new one. I have the new one now. This is the 630G, but it's kind of like the old version of this one. And it's like a little beeper. And every time I'm on it, people make fun of me. They're always like, oh, are you sending a beeper? Is that a beeper? like people like tease me that way. But it was awesome, to be honest with you. I don't think I could have lived in New York without it. Mm-hmm. Because this thing, the technology is crazy. This thing thinks like a pancreas. Right, going back to that book, you know, like I said, it has a steady basal stream. And then when you're going to eat, you're supposed to count your carbohydrates and then just tell the machine how many carbohydrates you're going to eat. And depending on your insulin resistance and a whole bunch of other stuff that's like important, but not that important and a bit technical, you know, you feel pretty normal. You're able to be more on top of it. You're able to be more flexible. You're able to kind of like concentrate on what you're doing and not necessarily be thinking about, wait, I have to eat in 2 hours, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because that's the thing. You get sick of, once you know your body, right, and you know that the bananas work for you, you know, you kind of get sick of eating bananas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm.
Variety, where you're not bored eating the same stuff because you know it works for you, right? But at the same time, you know, you get flexibility, and that's mm-hmm. where this machine is kind of remarkable.
How is that connected to you? So,
I'll show you guys. See?
Yeah.
I have a catheter.
Yeah.
The catheter, instead of injecting myself every day or every meal, I change my location every 3 days. So I only inject myself once every 3 days instead of 3 or 4 times a day. So that's kind of convenient. And like I said, if I'm going to take a shower or whatever is happening in life, mm-hmm. I just get off, boom, and I can just move around. And it's pretty cool. Like I said, I've been able to travel the world with it. I've gone to Australia with my own music. You know, I don't think I would have ever been able to do that trip. That was a 27-hour plane trip. I mean, that's crazy. Or stuff like that, you know, all over Europe, been to South America with music and stuff. And it has definitely been because of this little thing for sure.
Yeah. And before you get that, how long did you get that machine? How long before you got that machine did you?
I was a diabetic without this for like a solid 2 years.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was me being stubborn, really, more than anything. Like, she offered it to me sort of in the beginning, but I kind of was just like, I don't know about being an android right away. I tell people, I'm a modern android. Don't mess around, man.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I tell people I'm a mutant, so be careful.
Oh, I got powers. I like that one. That's great.
I am actually a mutant. Okay, so how was that diagnosis when you're 21 and they tell you that you have a chronic condition?
I was lucky. I had a really good friend who was with me at the time, and it just sucked, you know. I remember, besides that book, I think I bought like 4 or 5 other books, and this happened in like early December. So it was Christmas time in Puerto Rico. So that time in Puerto Rico is like party time. It's eating time. And, you know, so I don't know. I kind of like focused and just read for like a month straight. I just, you know, programmed myself. All right, well, I got to deal with this now, and tried to teach myself the best that I could. Those first 2 years with the 50-50 was okay. It wasn't bad. But as soon as I got the you know, the pump, I was just feeling normal, like as before I had diabetes.
Yeah,
this thing is kind of insane. It's
interesting. It's interesting that you say I feel normal. So how important was that for you?
Well, for a person like me who's doing like 20,000 things at once at the same time, you know, I'm thinking about then, you know, the set list on Thursday, and then, you know, the music I'm writing for my friend David Godin and his commercial, and then my own project that I'm releasing, you know what I mean? Like, I'm constantly, and then I've taken up trading for fun. So that's kind of like, apparently I'm a natural at it, according to a friend. No, I mean, it's just interesting stuff to know, especially now, because, you know, it's the technology is there, you know, and I guess feeling normal for me means to be able to do all that, mm-hmm. you know, without having any setbacks, without it, without being like,
So how, because, you know, I describe that a lot as well. It's like, it's interesting. Just, you're so grateful just to, like, you're just so grateful for that little machine because it allows you to do all that. Because at a moment in time, you probably experience not that. You experience a decrease of that productivity, of that energy. So how was that process?
I don't know. I don't think too much about it, I guess. You know, as soon as I felt better, like, I just went for it. You know, like I said, like, I was eating better. I changed everything in my diet. You know, I got rid of, you know, sugary cereals, for example, for sure. You know, as a late night snack that I think a lot of people can relate to. You know, now late night snacks are, you know, almonds, cashews, and, you know, cranberries and pumpkin seeds and stuff like that. So you've, I don't know. If one door is closed for me, one area, like, I just all of a sudden start looking at the new one. Yeah. And so the normal world in which, you know, I could eat anything and everything and stuff myself, like, if there's no tomorrow, and drink until, you know, like, those things, I immediately had no problem letting go, you know, because I just realized they weren't good for me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't healthy for me. They were really going to make me feel bad. Like, they weren't going to give me that energy that I was looking for.
So talk about that, the alcohol part, because that's tricky as well.
Yeah, no, luckily, you know, I was a beer drinker in my teens, I guess, late teens. I drank Medalla and, like, just cheap beer. And, you know, up until 21, 22, I drank as a diabetic for a bit, socially, you know, and I would have vodka on the rocks, because vodka, some of it is made of grain, and it on the rocks, and maybe with a splash of orange, it wasn't bothering my sugar at all. But I've eventually been able to cut everything, almost everything out. I only drink water now, like, and coffee.
Why do you put that on face? Coffee's the best thing in the world.
I love coffee, especially Puerto Rican coffee is delicious. And Brazilian and Colombian. But, you know, I don't know. Those things were just, as soon as I felt that I was eating something and that my energy level was doing like, ooh, I was like, you know what? Don't eat that. Get away from it and find something that is either similar or in the ballpark, and then make it work for you. You know, see if that works. Mm-hmm. And I found, like I said, when I cut beers, I went to vodka and on the rocks, and that worked for a couple of years. And I, you know, if my wife is having a drink, I'll tell her, hey, can I have a sip? You know, and that's where I'm at now with drinking. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I don't know. It just has such a huge effect on the rest mm-hmm. of my diet. Mm-hmm. And diabetes is so betrayous. Is that mm-hmm. Sometimes you think you're doing everything super right, and then all of a sudden your sugar's at whatever, 280 or 300. And you're like, why is my sugar at 300? Like, you don't understand. And then, you know, you gotta, you know, correct yourself. That's where the machine kind of helps, though. The machine really helps you correct yourself quickly. But, you know, it's like you feel anxious when your sugar's mm-hmm. that high. Like, you have like a jing, jing, jing kind of feeling going over you. And that's how I know that I'm over or wherever. And at those times, right, I had to check my sugar in my finger, right? You have to print your finger and then go to the machine and tell your sugar. Now, technology, I got a little patch right here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to my phone. And then voila. I just ate, though, so this might not be that great. So, yeah, it's like, yeah, see, not that bad. 174, but I just ate.
My God, but that's okay. So for the people listening to this, he has a thing in his arm that is tracking his sugar. And technology, it's amazing. And you check that in your phone in an app.
Yeah. And then what I do now is I tell now the new pump that I just got. So this is the first one that I was talking about was the 530G. This is the 630G. I just got the new one. The 730G. And then that one has the sensor and the pump talk to each other.
Oh, wow.
It kind of regulates my body on its own instead of me having to tell it now, hey, my sugar's this. Correct me, right? Like I said, I also just ate like an hour ago, so that's pretty solid. You know, I ate a chicken sandwich. You know, I'm trying to cut the gluten too, but, you know.
It's difficult. It's difficult. So wait a second. What is a level of sugar that it's like normal?
All right. So if you're a normal person, your sugar will probably never go above 110.
Mm.
You'll wake up en ayuna, right? What would they call ayuna in Spanish is you're fasting. And, you know, when you fast, your sugar is about what? 98? Your body always maintains your sugar at 98. To 110 or 90 to 110. That's normal. I'm allowed to go 130 in fasting, right? And this morning, my sugar was like 110. So I was right in the ballpark. But then after I eat, I have like a bigger rope, right? You see how I'm at 174. But in 2 hours, I'll probably be at like 160 something, 140 something, right back down to that 130 level. Like I do this.
Yeah.
Normal people do this. Just like they barely move because your pancreas just does that normally.
Yeah.
Kind of an amazing organ, actually.
Oh my God. It's so fascinating. Right? It's like a little machine. So, what was the most difficult thing to adjust to then? Because, you know, everything you're telling me comes from like a huge bucket of knowledge and trial and error, like you say, but that's not easy.
I don't know. I just, you know, I've always been inquisitive. I thank music for that, I guess. I was self-taught as a musician, and at 16 and 17, I was already playing in bands out there. So I figured I was doing something right. And then when I went to school at age 20, I went to school a little late for music, because I don't know, I was trying to please other people, you know, and be this or be that, and it's like, no, man, you know, I gotta be who I want to be. I gotta be happy, and music makes me happy more than anything. And you know, when I got to school, you know, music, you know, you can have all the best, you can have Jimi Hendrix come down from the dead, you know what I mean, and teach you guitar. But if you don't go home and put in the work, you know what I mean, and constantly and consistently develop a sort of a schedule and, you know, a discipline and a focus, you're not going to get anywhere. You're never going to play like Jimi Hendrix. You know, you're always going to be a step behind. So music has really helped me with that, with staying focused and learning about, you know, things like this. You know, I didn't want to be, you know, forced to have anyone or me being dependent on anyone, you know what I mean? I wanted to know what's going on, why is my body doing this, why am I reacting to this? So I'm constantly studying.
Inherently you didn't find it massively difficult, not because it wasn't, just because inherently you have this kind of attitude of kind of attack. So it's like, I have to do something about it, basically. And it's interesting because I do take the same approach. You know, I've just kind of like scaled it back and take it back and kind of acknowledge the hard part of it when I might not like inherently accepted it at a moment. And it was just because there was a pride in it as well, kind of like, nope, because this is not going to stop me.
No, hey, listen, it is extremely difficult being a diabetic. You know what I mean? Like, it's so unpredictable. That's the part that kind of sucks, that sometimes you're like doing everything right, you know, by the book, which is the book that you made, right? Mm-hmm. Your, and it just, you know, that day your sugar is just going haywire and you have no idea what it was, what it is. Maybe you counted the carbohydrates wrong. Maybe it was a portion that you, because, you know, sometimes when you're out with your friends, that's also a hard part. Or with whatever, at work, you're not really, you know, those aren't the situations that you're used to, right? And you're guessing, right? These aren't the portions that you're serving yourself. These are the portions that they're serving you. And this might be a different bread, or this might be a different this, or this might be a different. So you're kind of, it's like educated guessing. And I would say I guess 90% of the times, right? You know, like, this is kind of going to do this to me. And then I eat, and then I check myself at 2 hours, and I'm like, oh, I was right. You know what I mean? Like, and that part of it really sucks, because it's like a lot of people, you know, including my wife, she's like, whatever, oh, you know, whatever. She might be trying to tell me something or whatever. And I'm like, baby, I'm counting carbohydrates. I'm doing,
you one know? Second.
Yeah, it's like that part of it, other people don't understand, because they see me so normal and they're like, and or so electric, right? What you're saying, that I'm so electric. But it's like, that's the part that actually, you know, kind of really sucks, you know?
Because, yeah.
And, you know, there's just nothing you could do about it. Sometimes, look, I'll give you another example. Sometimes you count everything right, but then you forgot that you're eating, that you're walking, right? That after eating, you're kind of burning a lot of energy. And then when you burn energy, your sugar goes down, right? That's why it's recommended for diabetics to do a lot of exercise, because it really helps with stabilizing your sugar. And it's like, okay, I counted everything right, but I forgot that I was walking today in New York City, for example, 5 miles. And then walking 5 miles after you eat and give yourself all that insulin, what's going to happen? The opposite. Your sugar's not going to be up. Your sugar's going to be down, right? Because then you gave yourself too much insulin, right? So it's always like a little juggling game that you have going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no like right way to do it. You know, you just gotta, like I said before, you know, trial and error, and really, okay, this kind of works for me, or stay away from those things, you know, oranges, grapes. Like, grapes mess my sugar up. Like, I eat anything, you know, grape juice or grape, or even I can maybe have one or two, but if I go grape, like people do, that's not good for me.
So what happens when you have too much of a high sugar for you and too low? Like, have you had a scare?
Yeah, I've had a what's called a DKA, a diabetic ketoacidosis, which is basically a diabetic coma. It's one of those times that I didn't count correctly, and then my body kind of like, instead of correcting itself with me giving myself the insulin, and that time my body's just said like, nah, I'm not gonna correct you. You're just going to vomit this whole out. And then you basically, you know, puke all your food, because your body just doesn't, your sugar's like, you're like this, right? This is the best way to describe it. It's like your body's
a mess. Yeah,
it's like a mess. And it takes like a whole day to get you back. And that time I went to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to be on IV because you're like super dehydrated. Your stomach literally does this. You know, and then once you get your blood sugar levels corrected, you know, it might have been a day that I cheated. You know, sometimes you cheat because life is tempting, you know, and sometimes everybody's eating cake around you and you just want not one piece of cake, two pieces of cake, you know. But hey, listen, that's what happened. I ate those two pieces of cake. I might have not accounted for them. And then, boom, I ended up in the hospital because my sugar is like, whatever, 400. You know, for a prolonged period. And like I said, to answer your question, having blood sugar levels that are high for a long period might not mess with you that day, but it will mess with you down the line, right? You start getting other organs to start failing. Not only that, you know, it's it, your life expectancy just goes down by almost like 30% if you don't keep your blood sugar levels between a certain level. You know, so it's really important that diabetics get on that. There's a neuropathy, for example, like that kind of stuff really develops on because of poor circulation for diabetics. So all that stuff is what you want to avoid, you know, and why you keep those blood sugar levels at a healthy spot, right? In my case, between 100 and 130 on average is great, right? It's
yeah, like, the consequences are not worth the cheating or like the small gains of the cheating of like, oh, just because I want to do it. It's like,
yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I cheat sometimes. I guess maybe that week I was cheating. I cheated
too twice much.
Or three times. You know what I mean? That week, I don't remember exactly what I was doing. But, you know, like I said, like my wife's pretty normal and I don't want her or anybody else to also feel that they can't eat shit around me because that also is kind of uncomfortable, the feeling. And whatever, when she's eating any, you know, whatever, cheesecake or whatever, carrot cake, I'll just have a bite and I'll be mindful that I had just one bite. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that the whole week I haven't really eaten anything sugary. So it's like, all right, cool. I can do that today. You know what I mean? But if I had something Monday and then Wednesday and then Thursday and then Saturday, it's like, bro, you're asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're really like not telling your body that you want to take care of it. And then that's what ends up happening, right? Your sugar levels, like, right, your average starts moving up.
Mm-hmm, instead mm-hmm.
of like staying where it needs to stay, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a very interesting topic because you describe it so natural and so normal and so well, but it is a hyper awareness, you know, and it can get tiring. Like, you know, I have to take care of my thing relentlessly, right? Like it's forever and I accepted it and it's went a process. But there is that day that I really don't want to deal with it. And then it's like, but I don't have any other option.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm lucky that I love food.
Mm-hmm.
And food is such a varied, that's kind of what sucks about it too, by the way, because I love food and there's just some stuff I can't eat or I shouldn't eat. Not that I can't eat it, but I shouldn't eat it because if I eat it, I'm just doing myself a disservice. So I've found a mental way to figure out how to have fun with that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? How to have fun, like, you know, what I did with the pineapple. Hey, I had never chopped the pineapple like, you know, like this. So let me try it, you know, and with papaya, you know, just trying different stuff out, different combinations, different recipes, you know, different ways to saute vegetables, you know, that kind of stuff. And I've fallen in love with this whole other kind of food,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's mm-hmm. that just makes me feel better. It gives me energy.
The food element for me is very important as well. So, you know, I have this restrictive diet as well. I don't call it like that anymore because for me, I can eat everything because I've found ways to eat everything I want, or at least in creative ways of cooking what I wanted. Like the other day I found, like, I love, sometimes I just want something sweet. I'm not that much of a sweet tooth, but I found a way of doing my, a way I can eat oatmeal cookies, which are my favorite ones. So I kind of like, I can relate to what you're saying and that finding the way that it works for you.
And the hour too, because at least with me, I can't, like, for example, lunch, I can carb up because I'm going to burn it. And the way that I function, when I'm on the phone, I was on the phone before this for like half an hour. I'm literally walking around the house like that. That's just me. I'm super hyper. So like breakfast and lunch, those are my carb heavy meals. And then at night, dinner is like totally veggies and totally stuff that's like super easy to digest, you know, nothing extra heavy, you know, and that way I sleep well, you know, because sleep, something that people don't talk about, I feel, is such an important thing, you know, especially with all this time locking down and stress and all that stuff, you know what I mean? Like, people have been losing their sleep and being far more unhealthy. And I need to prioritize knowing ourselves and knowing how our sleep cycle works, because especially in a diabetic, for example, I think it's 3 or 4 hours into your sleep, your sugar kind of like dips, and then it kind of regulates. And if you interrupt that cycle, you know, your sugar is going to be just crazy the whole day. And I can't explain that to you. I've been trying to find an explanation. That might be a Raphael thing, the only, but it's one of those things. And that's what I try to do. It's like, I try to find the normal adjustments, you know,
the adjustments that feel normal.
Yeah. And because, or else it's like, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to sit there and whine. And it's like, that's not me. And that's not my culture. You know, my culture in Puerto Rico, you know, these people here have gone through Maria. I mean, just that hurricane and seeing the impacts on the people here and seeing how inspired they are and helping each other and getting out of that mess, you know, it kind of inspires you, because that's how we're built in Puerto Rico. You know, we're kind of like, there's a lot of toughness here for a reason. And diabetes, I never thought of it like something like, you know, like, it's going to get the better of me. It's more like, you know, okay, I got to figure it out. Little by little, that's what I've been trying to do.
Yeah, no, you've done it great. And one of the things I'm hearing a lot is like a parallelism here between what, not only your culture that you just said, but what you were diagnosed and your career.
Yeah.
Which I want you to talk a little bit about, but I think it was probably one of the drivers for you to kind of really take charge, because you have a lot of passion towards music. And even though we didn't introduce yourself as musician, Rafa Rosa, but you are a musician. And that is something you're passionate and you kind of like turned your whole life to do. So it's like, in order for me to do what I want to do and I'm passionate about, I need to take charge of this.
I tell my students that. I teach at LIU. I have my own school, which is called the Brooklyn Rock Academy, which I was in the middle of opening when COVID hit. And luckily, I was able to keep some students. I never opened the school officially. I just kept teaching under my name, right? And I also teach at Long Island University in their digital media department. And I have a couple of students there. And I mean, just in general, it's the way you attack the problem. It's the way you attack the problem. And if you don't find an angle to attack the problem and you're just looking at the problem, you know what I mean? Like, no, you got to find an angle. And then if this angle doesn't work, let me try this other angle. And the music, you know, luckily in music, this is why I tell everybody too, everybody should be a musician in some form. Everybody is a musician, right? However, everybody should just take a music lesson in their lives, because A, you're going to appreciate the next show that you're going to go to a lot better. And then B, you know, musicians are some of the most incredible people I've ever met. You know, they're smart, wise, creative, quirky, weird, you know, you name it, you know, motivated, focused, disciplined. And I'm very lucky that that world is full of those people that just constantly inspires you. I have a really cool New York story. My friend Gianni Bianchini, he plays the piano and the organ, and he's an amazing musician. And I met him in New York. And I remember one time in class, one morning, he had a hangover. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, man, just drink a Gatorade or something. And he's like, I can't, man. And he's like huffing and puffing because he's just like with a headache in class. And I'm like, why not? Why can't you? He's like, because I'm diabetic. And then I'm like, really? And then I put my pump out and I'm like, me too. And then we became, you know, we tell that story all the time. We became instant friends. And, you know, he's a guy that is just an inspiring dude. He's a great person. His family, you know, is an amazing family. It's like I'm his real life brother. He's like my brother from another, for real. And it's because A, we know what we're going through with the diabetes, and then B, you know, it's just the music world. We love music. You know, we're always constantly searching. The music is like it's like literature. It's like a giant library. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really read all the books. You could spend your life trying. And I guess that's what all great musicians or all, you know, musicians do, you know, study what's, you know, the old to create new. And that's kind of like the people that I'm around all the time, all these inspired, amazing individuals, you know, Ben Rosenblum, my friend Edmar, Suaso, the musicians here, you know, Tony, who I'm playing with recently. All these guys are very driven, very motivated. You know, they don't procrastinate. I know that they're working when I'm not working. You know what I mean? It's like I have that in the back of my head all the time. You know what I mean? And if it wasn't for that constant inspiration that the music world has, artistic world, not just music world, all artists, you know, dancers, painters, sculptors, you know, all those people that are constantly, you know, trying to better the world with what they do. You know, and trying to one student at a time, I call it, you know what I mean? Like maybe they'll have a couple of students and they're really trying to get them in tune with what's beautiful in this world, with just, you know, art, you know, music, culture, you know, history. Even though there's ugly parts of history, we have to, you know, face it and then learn from it, you know, and those are the things that I've learned from my friends and my teachers that I try to apply to my own daily life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that daily life involves diabetes. So it's like, you know, I gotta bring over and put into practice.
Absolutely. And it's beautiful the way you kind of, because you have such a passion for music, and I've always known you that way, right? And little did I know that passion was the driver for compliance, basically, because it's kind of like this chicken and egg situation, right? Like if you don't do that compliance, then that's not going to enable you to be a musician, which is what drives that passion. So, you know, like it's a non-negotiable, because I want to be this person. I want to keep doing what I'm passionate about, and I want to succeed at it because I want to be around those people. So little, you know, like I think it's wonderful.
It's funny. I always tell this to my friends and my wife. It's like, I always like to be the dumbest person in the room. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I always like to be, you know, the one that knows the least, because then that way I can learn the most. So all the diabetics are different. Is, you know, I think the idea is that you need to understand that if you're not going to do it, nobody's going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. And if you do it, and you put your mind to it, you can learn, and you can be as normal as possible, you know, as normal as possible, and really enjoy life, you know, enjoy what you're doing. And in my case, you know, my job is pretty demanding, you know, with some of the best musicians in the world. I feel, you know, they're really good. It's like, you can't bring your B game. You gotta bring your.
And you've talked a lot of music, but tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a musician, because it, like you said, you started a bit later and then you moved to New York.
Yeah, no, I was lucky. My mom, we moved around a lot. And after George's, the hurricane in 1998, if I remember correctly, we didn't lose our house, but the house got like heavily damaged. So we ended up in another house, and this house was really cool because it was kind of like a really quiet neighborhood. And then one Saturday when I was 13, you know, I had a neighbor and he was rocking out Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne really loud, that I could hear it. And it was the greatest sound I've ever heard in my life. It still is, you know, distorted guitar. And I just, you know, I froze and I just went. Every house was the same. So I literally broke into his house, not broke in. I just walked up, you know, to my room, but in his house. Right. And then I scared him. I opened the door and I scared him, and I'm like, no, like, don't go away. It was, you know, he was just rocking out. And I'll play for you. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, he's like, oh, you like this? And I'm like, yeah. And then we clicked. He was a doctor, a dentist. His name is Joe. He had like 30 guitars in a collection. So lucky me. And he lent me one when I was 13, 14. And I couldn't put it down. I went home with it. And, you know, I just went on the computer, how to tune a guitar. I taught myself how to do everything. And then I was 18. I went to engineering school to please everybody in my family. But I was playing in bands and I was working as a musician a lot. Like, I was getting, my phone was ringing. And I was just thinking about it all the time. I felt like I knew nothing. I still feel that way, you know. Music is very humbling. But I wanted to learn more. So the only way to learn more is to go to school. You know, I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but
why?
I don't know. You know, because music school is such a business.
Mm.
You know, education is such a business that, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I would have done it differently because I wouldn't have gotten me now. But I definitely tell my students a different perspective. You know, which is, if you actually have a good teacher guiding you, you might not need to go to school. Although the cool thing about school is meeting people, the networking. And that stuff is invaluable because my phone rings now because of La Intel and all the people that I met there and the conservatory in Puerto Rico and all the people that I met there and NYU and all the people that I met there and the rest of New York. So the networking that I did at school is kind of invaluable, you know. And I've been on two or three other records with Luba Mason. Luba Mason is Ruben Blades' wife.
Mm.
I played with her for a couple years as well. And we recorded a record, and that was really cool. And she's amazing. She's a Tony Award-winning singer. She's got all the accolades and the resume, and she's an incredible woman. And besides her, you know, this other guy, Ben Rosenblum, we recorded a record that just came out. And I was pretty much doing a lot of sideman stuff. I was playing with my friend Cody Guile a lot. We were playing a lot of weddings in New York City. And I had my studio. I had like 20 students. And then COVID hit. And that kind of shook things up because a lot of students who aren't that serious kind of like got dismotivated, and their parents too, because of the economical situation and just the whole, you know, I'm 6'4 in real life, you know, I'm a tall human, and right now I'm 13 inches, so
oh wait, but I have a comment about that. It's made us all equal.
Absolutely. No, I get it, but you know,
from a 2 foot person, because I'm like 2 foot tall.
You're not 2 feet. Don't say that. No, that's...
Well, it's lovely that you've been able to kind of fulfill your dreams, even with what you have and what people might find restrictive. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to bring your story, really, because, you know, it is tough to kind of get a diagnosis like yours when you're 20, early 20s. Like, it feels like, you know, at the moment, it feels like your world can crumble. And with such dreams, you demonstrate to people that you can follow your dreams. And like, you just take charge of what you have and you can just proceed. So thank you for your honesty and for your lovely story.
Absolutely. That's why we're here. No, I mean, that's the thing. We the beautiful thing about being a human, you know, like we all need to inspire each other, you know, and as long as you're giving your best, you know, especially even if that day, like, diabetes is betrayous, like I said before, even if that day diabetes isn't treating you right, but if you're giving your best, you know, you're good, because even if today is not that great, tomorrow's going to be better. You know, and that's the attitude. I'm a huge basketball fan too.
Mm-hmm.
So even though basketball has points, you know, and music doesn't really have points unless you count, you know, Grammys and albums, yeah. Right? You know, music business, right? But, you know, in basketball, what I like, and in sports in general, right, not just basketball, all the sports, they're all pretty motivated, all those people, men and women that do these things at a high level, you know, and that motivates me. That motivates me because it's like they're not, you know, and a lot of them have some health issues. I know a lot of them, especially in basketball, are like superhuman exceptions, right? Mm-hmm. Have a guy that's, you know, whatever, 6'7", 230 pounds and can fly off a trampoline. You know, those are exceptions. However, you know, you got to learn from them. You know, you got to learn that they're not there necessarily because of being super human. They're there because they're working hard to be there. And that to me is like super ingrained in my soul. And hopefully anybody else that meets me and learns from me or takes lessons from me can get that for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's powerful to say, in a sense that, you know, I respect a lot people that do the job that you do, people that, you know, people that even do content creation for a living, but in a good way, like any of that requires a discipline and a commitment and a consistency, I respect, because, you know, you made a career out of it and it's up to you to make it a career.
And this goes all across the board, like business, small business owners, like a lot mm-hmm. of those guys, I really have a lot of admiration. Having a small business is a lot of stress, a lot of stuff. And these guys, they do their best, you know what I mean? And that's the idea, right? That you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to fall into like a hole no.
Complain, yeah, negativity, yeah.
As soon as you get in, you see that hole like from afar, it's like, wait, I might be going there. Go the other way. You know, change, you know, maybe go out that day. Maybe you've been inside too long. You know what I mean? Or maybe, you know, you've been outside too long. Go in, you know, spend some time at home, you know, spend some time studying or whatever. So it's balance. It's a delicate balance. And in my case, it's a delicate balance of nutrition and just, you know, making the best of how I feel that day, mm-hmm. being grateful for it. You know, I feel great today. Go, you know, don't sit there and, oh, I feel great. Here I am doing nothing. No, go. What are you doing today? Make a plan, you know, stay on top of it, you know?
No. Yeah. I totally agree. Like, you approach life is similar to the way I approach it. Cause there's days that are not great. Right. So then it's like, you kind of have to give, you kind of acknowledge those days, stay low. And then the good ones, you're like, oh my God, I'm feeling great today. I'm going out the door. So I totally agree with you. So I can really relate to that. But before we close, I always ask, the last question of the podcast is, if you could say something to 13-year-old Rafa in advice, what would you say?
Oof, that's a tough one. I don't know. Invest your money would be the first. And the second one, just to eat better. And it's not even, I don't think anything 13-year-old Rafa could have done at the time, because the diet in Puerto Rico is just, it is what it is. You know, now is when there's a healthy menu. You know, those things are pretty new, and it's great. You know, it's great that it's showing up everywhere. The vegan menus, the you know, the all veggie options, pescatarian, etc. But at the time, you know, those things didn't exist. I guess, yeah, to be mindful of what you're eating.
Yeah. Well, they say that health comes within, right? So it's a very important topic, co-nutrition. So Rafa, before you go, tell us where we can find you, where people can find your music, yes, where they can get in touch.
RafaelRosaMusic.com. I'm almost done with my second album. It's taken me quite a long time because of COVID, but it was supposed to be released last year. But I finished it. It's almost done. I'm just waiting for like the video editors to be done. Playing every Thursday at Eñe, Puerto Rico, in Old San Juan with Tony Escapa and his Big Fat Trio. It's a really cool band, which we're also recording pretty soon. And then I'm playing every Sunday at the Coffee House in Old San Juan, and that's brunch, 11 to 2. And that's with different bands, different people from the island. I might have some guests from New York from the time to time. So it's a really cool spot, really great food. And yeah, I also teach online. So shoot me an email, me@RafaelRosaMusic.com, me@RafaelRosaMusic.com. Music is awesome, even if you're not a professional. So you should still have it in your life somehow, because you're definitely going to appreciate it more and learn more about yourself and the things around you. And yeah, so I teach composition and guitar and piano. So those are my three. But I don't tell people I play the piano. All composers play the piano, by the way. But, you know, I'm a guitarist. You know, I play guitar.
Okay.
So that I'll tell people that I do. But yeah, shoot me an email and let's hang out.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Rafa. This was awesome.
Thank you. I'm flattered. And I'm so proud of you that you're doing this and that you're bringing all this awareness to a lot of people that, you know, might not know a lot about your condition or other conditions. And I think it's super important that you're doing this and amazing, and keep doing it. And yeah.
Thank you. I will. I'll have you again. I want to have all my guests again. Like, I always have like all these questions, but we have to keep these conversations limited.
Yeah, the follow-up.
Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for listening too. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We now have a new website, normaladjustments.com, and we're looking for guests to be featured in the podcast. If you or anybody you know wants to be featured in the podcast, please feel free to submit the form on the Contact Us section in the website. Follow us in the new Instagram page, Normal Adjustments, and stay connected with us on a daily basis with quotes, clips, and content of the weekly episode. See you next week.